So hello everyone, we're back and I'm attempting to adjust the schedule a little bit so that we have plenty of time for questions, and this is kind of a shorter talk anyway. So the one thing I would ask about the questions is if you asked a question yesterday, wait 15 minutes into the question and answer period before you pose your questions to allow those who may not be as quick on response as you and didn't ask a question yesterday to be able to raise their hand. So I'll remind people of that when the question and answer start. So I want to do something a little unusual for me, and that is to read just a little bit of the third foundation, which is if I have a favorite, because the first two foundations are very systematic in what they're trying to do. They're trying to show us that how we've invested in objects isn't the true nature of objects. And that's extraordinary. If you actually, you have to actually go into it, and it has to be realized wisdom, not just intellectual wisdom. Anyone can say it, but to realize it, when you actually see it for yourself as an experience, and not very many people know how to inquire. And inquiry is being quiet at that level of interaction in yourself that is describing, that is showing you the experience of what we're talking about. So it's not using an intellectual approach to investigate. That kind of inquiry is what the mind does. But when you're talking about spiritual inquiry, it's quiet, and you're just watching, just seeing. And so what you're seeing is how, you know, investing in a particular form requires that, and you can see all this, requires that we have a conceptual covering to it, et cetera, et cetera. So, anyway, so I want to read from the, I guess I'm already on a Zoom page, so I want to read from the third foundation. Bear with me, because there's kind of a litany of repetitious litany of what he's saying here, but it makes sense if you understand it. There is the case where a monk or anyone, when the mind has passion, discerns that the mind has passion. When the mind is without passion, he or she discerns that the mind is without passion. When the mind is aversive, he or she discerns that the mind is aversive. When the mind is without aversion, he or she discerns that the mind is without aversion. When the mind has delusion, discerns that the mind has delusion. When the mind is without delusion, discerns that the mind is without delusion. When the mind is constricted, discerns that. When the mind is scattered, discerns that. Okay, so when the mind is enlarged, whatever that means, he discerns that the mind is enlarged. When the mind is not enlarged, anyway. So what you're hearing here is a repetition of all, I mean, he's essentially saying whatever is arising in the mind, there is discerning of it, but not a contradiction or an argument with it. When the mind is deluded, he discerns that the mind is. When the mind is not deluded, he doesn't try to force the mind into non-delusion when it's deluded. He doesn't try to make the mind happy when it's not happy. He doesn't try to change the mind whatsoever. The discernment, and it's, I think this is where we have to be careful here. When the monk is, or when the person is discerning this, discernment just meant seeing. Just seeing. And what he's saying is that the seeing does everything. The seeing isn't in conflict with what's going on. The seeing just sees it. And this is really turning our power over to awareness. And what I ended the third talk, this morning's talk, with that understanding that, you know, this, you have to turn our willpower over to seeing and let seeing handle it. Is let seeing take us from here on. And this is the beginning of that movement. It requires the understanding of what the mind is made up of, what forms the mind, because the way we normally respond to the mind is that I, the sense of me, has a mind, and it's not behaving the way I want it to go, or hearing spiritual sayings that say I should be more loving, or I should be more this, or I should be more equanimous, or I should be this or that. And most of us spend a lot of our individual practice time in dispute of what the mind is as it is. And we're trying to do practices that make us more loving, or we try to release our selfishness and become more generous, and we hear all the paramis and we feel like we're impatient, and we have this constant division of the mind, because the sense of self has its own idea of how the mind is working, while the mind is working as it's working. Now what the Buddha is suggesting here is to stay out of it. Leave the mind alone. Because when you bring the sense of self into the mind, you see that it's a divided mind. The sense of self is never happy with the particular content or display of the mind in any one moment. It interjects a different point of view. And that, of course, is the mind dividing against itself, because the sense of self is of the mind. And we just assume that we are independent from it, independent from it, and all powerful, so powerful that we can control the disposition of the mind through our wanting and pressure and whatever else we bring to the mind to make it change in accordance the way we wish it to be. And this is, first of all, it's just wrong. It doesn't work in a conjunctive, in a way that's cooperative with the mind. And the second thing is that we never get it right. I mean, just because you want it to be different, you're investing that idea into the mind, and the mind doesn't just obey that. It stays the way it is, or feels like it's in turmoil because you just added a new disposition to it that it can't produce or doesn't feel or whatever it is. So there's an argument going on there, and therefore, since the sense of self that is arguing with the disposition or display of the mind, there is a divided mind now, the mind against itself. And all that does is create friction and turmoil. It creates sorrow and pain. It creates all the different difficulties of life. And so what the Buddha is saying, that when you see the mind, when seeing sees the mind the way it is, leave it alone. And implied in that is when you leave it alone, it will heal itself into unity, into a non-divided mind. So it's the division that's the problem, not the particular expression and display of mind in this moment. Now that's a challenge to everything we do, basically. And it's a challenge to the meditation as it's normally taught in the early years of practice. We're supposed to be watching the mind, but with the sense of self behind the watcher, that watching is distorted into judgment. And no matter how we try dispassion, how we try to be non-judgmental, we still, just because of the nature of the sense of self, it puts an emotional, because it's the mind that's watching the mind, it puts an emotional display upon what it sees. It could like what it sees or not like what it sees or have suggest, you know, it's always acting in and upon that particular facet. It doesn't realize that it's part of the very display that it's seeing. And so this is, it's really essential that we bring these two things together. And that's what the third foundation is meant to do. I mean, it's very clear, but I don't know why people get too, I mean, he's very clear. He's saying exactly what he intends us to do. He says, now I lost the place. So that's okay. He's saying, when you're seeing the mind in this way, just discern that you're seeing it in that way. When you see the opposite of that, just see it as the opposite. Don't wish the opposite over and above the presentation. Don't try to rebel against what is actually being seen. And the only thing that does that, that tries to change it, is the sense of self. And the only way we can get out of the sense of self to see the whole of the mind is by releasing the commentary that we have behind the scene, pretending that it has supervision over the mind called me. I am the owner of a mind. I have a mind, we think. We don't have a mind. We are the mind. I think that's, I remember it was an insight that occurred to me. It's one of those insights where you remember where you were when it happened. And I was just in a rocking chair, just milling over the fact that, you know, the mind isn't quieting. Even though I'm watching it all the time, it feels like there's a judgment there that I'm not picking up that keeps the mind contentious to itself. And then I said, oh God, what do I think the sense of self is? When I look at it, it's just mind. It's just all the things that I've been looking at in my student days of watching the mind. I am now the commentator that's creating those very problems. And I couldn't find anyone, as I've mentioned, behind the commentator that has any substance to it. It was just commenting. It was just comments. And you go, I've been falsely dividing the mind between who I am and watching the mind as I was given instructions to do, when they're one and the same. And unless I bring those together, and I didn't at that point have any reference to the third foundation. I mean, I don't even know if I got to that litany of different things. I thought, I don't understand this, and threw it aside. That's as close as I ever came. But when I was teaching from it, I thought, okay, so this is it. This is the insight into practice. And so there's a series of inquiries and investigations that need to happen, many of which I've already discussed, and I'll just briefly describe them, is that we have to be quiet enough to pick up the rebuttal, the commentary of what the commentary of wherever the awareness is pointing, the person, the observer, the witness, whatever we want to call it, has an opinion about what's going on. Now we try not to have an opinion, but the effort to try not to have an opinion is another opinion. And so it doesn't work to just know what we're doing. We have to hear the commentary of what we're doing and see it, because the Buddha is not saying, okay, now see the mind, now see the commentary about the mind. He's throwing the commentary in with the mind and asking us to discern what is going on there, but not to object to it or try to counter its influence. So this is powerless. This is self-powerlessness. This is where we have to come, because I can't do anything about the mind, and nor should I do anything about the mind, because the sense of I is the mind, and we think of ourselves as out of place, as the observer of the mind, and as long as we think about that, we're going to be meddling in the mind, with the mind. So now it's just up to seeing. Okay, what does seeing do? Well, if I still had this open to the right page, he goes on and says, the seeing itself is enough. The seeing is the healing. The seeing, because we're not, the problem hasn't been what is the presentation, it's been our opinions about the presentation and our trying to get over the presentation, or our sense of taking an identity from the presentation and being miserable. All of that's the confusion, not the presentation itself. The presentation itself only is known because we've invested our memory into what that emotion means to us. And so it's now a conceptual model, and we have a conceptual, oh, that emotion's coming up again. It's just like an object. We invest a feeling tone into it and a whole sense of history into it. And I can't, this is my depression, and I'll be lost with, you know, all of that. And just instead of being quiet with it. But being quiet with it as a sense of self isn't enough, because being quiet with it is what we're trying to do when we see things as they are, according to the instructions. We're trying to be quiet with it. And it doesn't work, because the commentary is itself beyond our approach, beyond our control, because we don't see it as being something that we're supposed to be aware of. We're seeing it as I who am aware of. And when there's an I who is aware of, there's going to be some kind of judgment or attempt to be quiet about it, or all this division within the mind itself. Okay, so let me just, is this making sense? Okay. It's very, I mean, it all opens up, because he's doing this in sequence to the first foundation, which was how something becomes nothing through observation and insight and inquiry, and then how nothing becomes something through dependent origination and inquiry. And now he's saying, now that you've got something, let's find the freedom within what is there. And certain things have to be brought into line. One of them is me. I have to be brought in line. And so he is actually suggesting that we have enough understanding of ourselves that we don't see ourselves as differentiated from the mind. He is suggesting that if you want to handle yourself for what you are rather than what you believe yourself to be, you'll just see yourself. You'll just see it. And you think, oh, I don't know how to do it. I mean, we can make it so impossible through our minds' reaction to just what I said, that we give up any hope of doing that and we go off to self-care. Self-care is fine. It just isn't going to solve the ultimate problem. Okay, so, and I don't want to bring you to the ultimate problem until you're ultimately ready for the problem. So it's a question again of timing and patience, but knowing what the problem is essential. And that's why establishing this view that came from the Heart Sutra is really essential. It's really in the Heart Sutra that he's saying there's nothing, there's no you in this. The Heart Sutra is taking away the sense of self entirely and just going right to, you're empty. You are empty. Okay? And then you form. And now you're empty. So it's including you within the form as emptiness and emptiness as form. Okay. So that's... He's implying that all states of mind are basically the same. Not worthy of our trying to get over them or get rid of them or just leave them alone. And it doesn't even make sense that once you take the divided mind and unify it by bringing the sense of self in, that it would heal. It would stop being so noisy. It would stop being so differentiated. It would stop being so measured in what it's going to say. It would stop being dishonest with itself. Yeah? Just see, oh, this is how it is. And seeing doesn't even carry that message. All seeing does is see. And that's sufficient. Once we see, that's sufficient. Once seeing sees how to see, that's all wrong, because seeing doesn't have to see how to see. We have to allow seeing to see and not try to step in with our willpower. I don't know how to say, the calls of words get all funny, but it undercuts the need to counterbalance whatever the mind is doing. And that essential insight that, you know, the sense of self is the mind, is the way forward within that. It was funny because I don't think I was ever told that. Maybe you've heard it, but I don't think a teacher ever brought me inside the mind as a contentious division of the mind that creates all the havoc that we have with our mental disposition. So... That was a crucial, and I want to share that because it was really an important insight for myself. And I learned that separating myself from the mind is the definition of conflict, really. Once we're in there, we can either allow it, we can deny it, or we can repress it, our many moods. But we always have an opinion about it. Oh, I'm in a good mood, you know, which is a weight, which is a measure, which is really a division. Because then we're going to try to get it back because it has a feeling tone associated with it. And we're just replicating ourselves along the way. And left alone, the mind returns to its natural state. And we each have a character pattern. We each have character. We don't lose the character of us. When the mind is quiet, the character still, I don't know how that works, but the character still, I don't know, the character still characterizes, still acts as the character we've always known. And so you don't actually miss yourself. I mean, you know, you don't, because the parts that were your character remain. I don't know. Enough said. But we're moving now into the fourth foundation, and it's very important that we understand the third foundation to enter the fourth. Because dwelling in the fourth foundation is really dwelling in the emptiness of the third foundation. Once the mind is quieted and it's unified, then it also has lost substance. It only existed because of the friction it created as a divided mind. But now that it's unified, it's quiet. Not that that you can't think. You can think, and there's certainly appropriate times and use of thought. That doesn't go away. And so if you need to think, you think. But then, you know, if you don't need to think, you're quiet. And that's where the difference really between a divided mind and a unified. It has all the ability it had when it was divided. It just doesn't have the conflict anymore. So you aren't going, don't be afraid that you're going to lose something in this. You're not losing anything. Okay, so now the fourth foundation, this was one, this is one that never, ever struck me as being well interpreted. And I, and because through the just seeing of the third foundation, we come into the fourth foundation, and suddenly we're trying to, what we're seeing, we try to match with the Buddha's teaching. Well, that's Four Noble Truths, or that's the three characteristics, or okay, why would the Buddha want us to be suddenly noisy after the third foundation quieted us? Why would we want to use, why would the Buddha suggest using his teaching and add spiritual chatter to our minds when stillness is in front of us? See, it doesn't make sense. Now, there's spiritual logic, and we're too easy to pass over that kind of misinterpretation, in my opinion. We're too easy to pass over that. And we say, okay, well, now, what is it I'm seeing? Oh, yeah, that's a Four Noble Truths. You know, that, oh, that's desire. Why would we want to be noisy like that? Spiritual noise is no different than worldly noise. Not on its effect on us. So maybe this has been interpreted, misinterpreted. Okay, so now this, the next, I'm going to bring the Heart Sutra together with the Four Noble Truths. The Four Foundations of Mindfulness. If we summarize all the Buddhist teaching, he said this. He was asked to summarize his teaching. He said, cling to naught. Okay? That's the summary of his teaching, which in practical terms means seeing and releasing everything to simply pass through without obstruction. Perhaps he is suggesting the summarization of his teaching rather than the individual lines of his teaching. Well, is this the Four Noble Truths? No, is that the five? Is this what, this six? To just, as it melts down into a singularity of expression, all his teaching, maybe he's simply telling us, going forward, if you want to have a realized, unformed mind, cling to naught. Now that makes sense to me. But not as an individual, not keeping bringing up his teaching. That just makes me noisy. Now, what's this teaching? You know, you're not going to just know him by heart. Well, likely you're not going to know him by heart. You're going to have to think and maybe look it up in a book. That is going back to this. Anyway. So, here is the melting of the Heart Sutra with the Four Foundations, because the Heart Sutra says, gate gate, para gate, para sam gate, bodhi swaha, which means gone beyond the beyond, gone beyond the concept of beyond. Hail the Enlightened One. That is cling to naught. Going beyond, not holding on to anything, is exactly a replication in different words to the cling to naught summary of his teaching. And suddenly, the Heart Sutra provides, through a mantra, provides a clear opportunity to do just that. It's giving us a way for. It's the message of the it's the methodology, as unspecified as it is as a methodology. It's the final conclusion of the Heart Sutra. And it touched me as so true. And not only so true, but it all came together, you know. And when things come together in that kind of synchronized, absolute uniformity, even if it wasn't, it holds a truth of its own. So whether I'm interpreting this out of context doesn't at all limit the truth that it holds. Of course, gate, gate. Of course, going beyond you, stopping nowhere. That's what cling to not means. Don't cling and freeze yourself around this particular object or subject or whatever it might be. Keep going. Go beyond. Go beyond the beyond. Keep going. And then Bodhi Swaha, hail the enlightened one. Keep releasing and surrendering. Now let me ask us just to sit for a minute, because we've kind of concluded what I wanted to say about the Four Foundations. But I also want you to sit with it and just see if it makes sense to you. And you can read different interpretations of it and see if that makes more sense, if it's more in a line. But don't give your authority away when you find something that really resonates with you and say, well, that must be a misinterpretation because I can't find that in some of the commentaries of the past. Forget that. Forget that. What resonates with you is my way forward.